listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
It's episode 3 of your brand new European football podcast. I'm Rob Daly. Of course, we'll be looking at the Bundesliga, La Liga, Serie A and Liga, plus much more. My co-host today is Chris Parrott.
Yeah, we have a Serie A title race by the looks of it after Juve were beaten by Roma. What a weekend it was for the Madrid side. Gareth Bale helped Real Madrid win 5-0. Atletico beat Sevilla 3-0 away. That might just be the results of the weekend. Another Bundesliga stars in the Premier League, and for big money, we asked exactly where Kevin De Bruyne fits in at City, and a big moment for a Chelsea youngster who scored his first professional goal for Vitesse.
We have a special interview with former Celtic and Ireland defender Darren O'Dea on what happened when he ended up playing his football in Ukraine.
There was guys in balaclavas pointing machine guns, screaming top of their voice at us as if we were, I don't know what they expected. As you can imagine, we all froze.
Plus, we're joined by ESPN FC, Eurosport and European football journalist Mark Rodden, along with Spanish football expert and BT Sport reporter Andy May. All this on Episode 3.
This is Football in Europe.
So we're on to Week 3, and we are going to be going through all the major leagues on today's show. Chris, I was at the Etihad Stadium, actually, on Saturday, getting so much abuse for having a haircut that's a bit like Kevin De Bruyne's haircut.
Well, when you mentioned it, I they've got a point. But I would say that you've had that haircut for 10 years.
De Bruyne's so got my haircut.
De Bruyne's got your haircut.
Danny, who works at the club, was like, I thought you were him for a minute. Because everyone was looking for him at the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was having his medical. Thanks a lot to everyone at Manchester City at the weekend. Chris, we've got lots to get through this week. What have been your five best deals in the summer transfer window? The best value out there for you?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to go Darmian.
Okay, yeah, I'll have that.
United have been looking for a right-back ever since Gary Neville left. You know, they played Valencia there last season.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
He's a shrewd signing. He's 25. He's played a lot of football. I think he's going to be a really, really good addition. This isn't particularly a left field or anything, but Angel Di Maria.
It's a lot of money, Chris, for him, though.
Oh, it's a lot of money, but he played for 20 minutes yesterday and teed up a brilliant goal. Paris Saint-Germain have this project. They want to be the very best. They've attracted one of the very best on his day, and I think that takes them up another level. It makes them potential Champions League contenders. Edin Dzeko scored for Roma against Juve. He's going to get goals.
Okay, yeah.
Having that too?
Yeah, I'll have. That's fine. Okay. That's fine. I like Edin Dzeko.
Another City player, Jovetic. I think, again, from Inter's point of view, they've attracted a really good player. If you think when he went to City, if Inter had a board in then, they would have been absolutely delighted. And Seydou Doumbia from Roma back to Cisco.
On loan.
He's already fired them into the Champions League group stage, so he's already paid for his wages.
His loan fee and everything.
They've needed a striker ever since he's left. They say never go back, but Seydou Doumbia has, and so far it's worked, and I think it will continue to work.
Can I mention a couple quickly? I think Pedro might be the best bit of business for that money. I think it's outrageous that Chelsea paid that for him. I like Luciano Vietto, but he's not playing yet for Atletico. Mario Mandzukic, €19 million. You're paying £12-13 million. I just think that's extraordinary. And Dante, I know he's got his flaws, but he's off to Wolfsburg for €4 million.
I'll remind you of that one when he drops a ricket.
I know, he's going to do something truly awful, isn't he? But there are top deals of the window. Let's get on with the show.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
We're going to have a special podcast feature come out later in the week for all the major deals that have gone through, because we're just recording this at the end of the transfer window. So we'll have that out later on in the week. Let's look at French football now. ESPN and Eurosport journalist and European football expert Mark Rodden joins us on the show. Mark, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Over the moon about making my debut. Hopefully I don't use too many unnecessary cliches.
Okay, let's start with Ligue 1 then. And we have to talk about the game that was Sunday night. Monaco against Paris Saint-Germain. A comfortable win for the defending champions. 3-0 in the end. And a game notable, of course, because Di Maria made his debut.
Really impressive win from PSG. Totally dominated possession. I think it was 72% after 15 minutes. About 70%. Before halftime, 382 passes to 86. They really passed Monaco off the park. It took them nearly an hour to get the first goal, but I think that was a result of Monaco tiring, particularly as they'd been playing in the Champions League in midweek as well. Zlatan was back. He was good. Blaise Matuidi has some engine on him, and Cavani, bit of an enigma. Terrible first half, a couple of goals in the second.
When Di Maria's fully fit and ready to play, where do you think he's going to play in that 4-3-3 that PSG play?
I think he can play anywhere, to be honest. He's such a good player. One of those weird transfers that didn't work out, I think it was a total blip at Manchester United, because he's just too good. And I think PSG have got a great player who's going to fit in wherever he plays. Within a minute, he pinged a great pass to Cavani after coming on. Cavani should have scored with a header then. And just, again, the vision from his own half, a ball over the top. It was like a pitching wedge, bit of backspin on it. Set up perfectly for Lovetti for the third goal. I think it's a massive asset for PSG. And you look at the subs they brought on as well, Marquinhos, Di Maria and Lovetti. And I don't think the likes of Lyon or Marseille are going to be able to keep up as well. You know, I was at the Monaco-PSG game 2 years ago and they were talking about it as being a Cashico rather than a Classico, because the two teams were spending so much money. And then there was this change in Monaco's policy of just looking towards younger players. They've destabilized the team a little bit, not so much by the signings, but the uncertainty, because Kurzawa leaving in the week of the PSG game. Lots of talk about Matinho as well. Looks like he's going to stay. They've got a talented team. It's significant they didn't get into the Champions League, and they probably are a Europa League side. They'll be, I suppose, challenging for the top three again, and that'll be the limit of their ambitions, I'd say. Maybe looking to win a cup competition as well.
Great win for Bordeaux, back from that long trip east to Almaty in Kazakhstan. 2-0 over Nantes. Willy Sagnol as head coach. Of course, they're in Liverpool's Europa League group. How good are they, and how impressed have you been with him as a manager?
I'd imagine Bordeaux are going to concentrate on the league. Happy to be in the Europa League group stages, but looking through their squad, it's a fairly young lineup again. Decent start in the league, but again, they're mid-table. It's a tough job, I think, that Sagnol's got. You know, he hasn't got any real star players in that side. They struggled at times last season as well. So if I was a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't be too worried. Obviously, the away game in particular will be tough, but wouldn't be overly concerned that Bordeaux are going to cause them too many problems.
And Lyon, without Lacazette at the weekend, he was injured, but they did okay without him.
Yeah, largely thanks to Nabil Fekir, obviously the Young Player of the Year last season. 3 stunning goals, really brilliant hat-trick, all with his left foot. Something I really like about him, and he's able to get a shot away without very little backlift. You know, makes it very hard for goalkeepers, and it's one of the things that came out from the Caen players. They kind of said, like, yeah, look, it's a good thing we don't have to play against him every week. Whether they can challenge, whether they can push PSG this season, I'm not so sure, because they do have Champions League football. They're already 5 points behind Paris Saint-Germain in the league after 4 matches, so that's a lot of ground to make up.
I read something from Matt Spiro saying, was it right to hand Lacazette that new deal? Should they just have sold him? What do you think?
What was so good about them last season, they were very together. Obviously, Lacazette was the star, but this summer it became a bit of a soap opera. You know, there was a lot of rumours about him, and suddenly he becomes this bigger player than the club almost. And I think it's definitely destabilised him. Hopefully for Lyon, he'll be able to come back and get back to his best fairly quickly, because, you know, he'll be looking to Euro 2016 as well. He'll be wanting to impress and nail down his place.
And to Marseille now, Mark. They won 6-0 in Michel's first game in charge of the club 2 weekends ago, but last weekend beaten 2-0 by Guingamp. Back to reality for them.
Yeah, same old story with Marseille, really. Funny stat, just before the Sunday matches, I think they were top scorers in the league after having played 4 games. They scored all those goals in one match, so 6-4. Another poor performance. Guingamp hadn't beaten them in a long time. Guingamp had lost their first 3 matches as well. Obviously not the same force, having lost Claudio Beauvau to Lyon. Just the goal Marseille conceded was an absolute disaster as well. Just really, really poor defending. It was their problem last season. And they've lost so many players now that had the potential maybe to push Paris Saint-Germain all the way last season under Bielsa. It's going to be a tough rebuilding job, I think, for Michel at Marseille.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
OK, Mark, I know you're across the world of German football too, so let's talk Bundesliga. I want to start with Wolfsburg, second last season, but they have lost De Bruyne to Manchester City. And there's a part of me that just thinks it's such a big loss. I wonder if he's emblematic of the way they play. But they did, without him, he was in the stands for the game. They beat Schalke 3-0 on Friday. They were really impressive. How do you think they're going to cope without the best player in Germany last season?
very, very comfortable for Wolfsburg. Granted, they got a lot of help from Schalke, who were back to their old selves, really. Brighton Rider after the game saying, you know, a bit of a problem mentally at this club. It's going to take me time to get us going again. Yeah, interesting. Wolfsburg without De Bruyne and even Perisic as well. Didn't look like they missed them too much on Friday. Obviously, that'll change. Virinha was very influential, playing a bit further up the pitch. I think he's possibly an important player this season. Dante will come in and help the defence as well. It could be a case of a kind of second season syndrome thing with Wolfsburg as well. They will be a target. You know, they lose their talismanic player as well. And I'd worry as well, do they have the strikers? Bastos 2 and 3 so far. Great run last season as well. Max Cruz is a very good signing, I think. But a lot will depend on whether Dost can keep finding the net and, you know, Nicholas Bentner chipping in as well. And, you know, surely a big signing. Took a while maybe to settle in towards the end of last season. A lot will be expected of him with a big price tag on his head. Wolfsburg's need is pretty great at this stage to get someone in, just to reassure the supporters as well that, you know, they're not a selling club and that this isn't the end, that they want to be able to challenge Bayern Munich on a consistent basis, or at least, you know, look to become a second force in Germany. You know, that's going to be a big challenge, but certainly someone like Draxler would probably help, and I think he could do with move as well. He's kind of stagnated a bit at Schalke. He's had his injury problems as well, but there's been so much uncertainty with him that maybe a fresh start would be good.
Where do you think Kevin De Bruyne will play? Because David Silva's the 10. You're not going to dislodge him. Is he going to replace Navas? Is that his natural position?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, an interesting way of putting it as well. He's going to play on the wing. I think I'd agree with most people. He'll fit in there better centrally, but, you know, City have David Silva. They have so many playmakers already that I think he'll fit in okay. He'll wherever he plays, he'll be influential. I think he'll enjoy playing in that City team as well. I don't think Chelsea and the style Mourinho played were suited to him at all.
We've got to talk about Dortmund as well. 9 points from 9, another win. Is this going to be a decent title race with Bayern, do you think?
I have a feeling they're the only team who can be. It might seem a bit strange after their terrible campaign last year, but you look at the start that Gladbach have made. Wolfsburg, okay, 7 points from 9, but they've lost a couple of big players. And I just think there's an energy about Dortmund now. It's a fresh start. Thomas Tuchel's brought a lot of enthusiasm. The players seem to be buying into it. New ideas. A couple of good changes they've made. You know, if they'd won by 3 goals against Hertha, it would have been their best start to a Bundesliga. The key thing is as well, they don't have the injury problems that they've had the last couple of years. You know, if they can keep the likes of Royce fit, Kagawa seems to be back on form, Mkhitaryan seems to be thriving as well, Gundogan is back. There's no reason why they can't ask Bayern a few questions this season.
Let's talk about Bayern Leverkusen, because it was actually probably the biggest game of the weekend with both teams having won their opening games. Bayern 3-0 winners, 2 goals for Thomas Müller. I was looking at his stats, Mark. 200 Bundesliga games now, 75 goals and 75 assists. I mean, he's some player.
Yeah, he's incredible. And you can see why he's valued at 100 million, to be honest. It's at the very least, because he's key to Bayern. He's, you know, a Bavarian as well. So it's good for the identity of the club, something that Ottmar Hitzfeld has talked a lot about in his kicker columns. You know, was worried about Guardiola maybe signing too many foreign players. That was taken away from Bayern's identity, their mentality, and it's important that the club didn't lose too many players like Schweinsteiger. One of the players that was brought in, of course, is Douglas Costa, who's been fantastic. Another brilliant performance from him, involved in a couple of the goals. You know, no one's talking about Franck Ribéry anymore. He's been a forgotten man at Bayern. That game also notable for a fantastic dive from Arjen Robben, which we haven't seen too often recently either. It was just fairly comfortable, really easy victory in the end, helped by, you know, not the most intelligent defending with, you know, particularly the second goal, the shove on the back of Vidal for the penalty as well. Disappointing from Leverkusen, but, you know, business as usual for Bayern.
And how about Gladbach? Bottom without a point. They're in the Champions League, but what's gone wrong there?
I was reading an interview with Lucien Favre pre-season where he was kind of saying, you know, there's not much more I can do than get third place, really. That's, you know, I'm not sure if that's sending out the right signal, but it's probably realistic as well. I don't think he would have expected them to be rock bottom of the table right now. And particularly when you look at the results as well, Dortmund okay, but losing at home to Mainz could be a difficult season, but I expect them to start pushing up the table.
And for anyone who might have seen Club Brugge against Standard Liège on Premier Sports of the weekend, Mark, you were the commentator for that game. An extraordinary game. Of course, Club Brugge just knocked out of the Champions League by Manchester United, but they beat Standard Liège 7-1 at the Jan Bredel Stadium. What on earth happened there?
Yeah, well, Standard Liège were just knocked out of the Europa League on the Thursday night by Molde of Norway. Really disappointing for Standard. So they sacked their coach on Friday and on Sunday lost 7-1. So didn't work out too well. Very, very basic defensive problems for them. Thomas Meunier, he was making his return for the final 10 minutes. He was watching from the bench, said, like, Standard Liège defended like a non-league team. I think it was even worse than that. You know, the first four goals came through the middle and the last. Abdoulaye Diaby scored four. He hit the post as well, missed 2 1-on-1s. And I think Adrien Trebel of Standard Liège put it best. You know, he said it really was like a training game for Club Brugge. And the Standard players were greeted by 50 supporters who waited for them on the return. So apparently Trebel led a few of the players out from the bus to have a chat with a few disgruntled supporters. So Standard, a club in crisis. They're a club that tends to lurch from one crisis to the next. They've got rid of Slavo Muslin, and you know, they're now looking for a fifth coach since the start of last season.
Standard in crisis. We'll keep across that on Football in Europe. Mark, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
We talk Roma against Juventus shortly, plus we get an in-depth look at Rafa's Real Madrid. But first, it's our latest special interview. He's won 20 caps for Ireland, played in the Champions League for Celtic, and now Darren O'Dea, the 28-year-old defender, heads to India for his latest adventure with Nicholas Anelka's team, Mumbai City. Darren's had a truly unique career, a well-travelled one already, after a spell in Toronto in the MLS. We will get onto that on the next show, but in part one of our two-part interview, we talk exclusively about his time in Ukraine. In 2013, Darren signed for Metalurg Donetsk, but shortly after his move, the club found itself, along with city rivals Shakhtar, in the middle of the ongoing conflict there. Darren left in January of this year, but his 18 months there were full of drama, and I started by asking what he thinks about his time in Donetsk now.
Truthfully, I became quite attached to the people there, as you would in a football club. I was treated fantastically well, so it was more just such a sad situation to see the place and the state it is. And the end of the season was the May 2014. When we left for the end of the season, that's when it really, really, really escalated. Our training ground was overtaken. Lads had left cars there that they owned. I'd been thinking about trying to leave anyway. The team then, when it came back, was playing and training 4 hours away from the net. So it just became unlivable, really. Easy for me, I just up sticks and left, and it's not my problem anymore. But people there were always fantastic. Shakhtar Stadium is 5-10 minutes from the Metalurg. And actually, Shakhtar Stadium is where I live. There's a hotel 100 yards on the same site as the Shakhtar Stadium. To put it in perspective, the Shakhtar Stadium has been hit with bombs, or they weren't bullets, they were kind of missiles, if you like. That is exactly where I live. So it is scary when you think of it from that point of view. Not the young people that are affected and the footballers, it's the old people that live there. They've no choice but to live in the war zone, if you like. It kind of put football into perspective as well.
What was the most bizarre or surreal or even frightening thing that happened during that time, Darren?
We were playing a team in Crimea 4 or 5 days before. We were told that the airspace over Crimea had been shut, so we had to drive. Now, the drive takes about 8-9 hours. We stopped at the Ukrainian border, went through that after showing our passport. 400 yards after that, it was a man-built temporary Russian border. We were stuck there and they were refusing our foreign players entry because we didn't have visas. As far as they were concerned, Crimea was part of Russia, but we were travelling to a Ukrainian Premier League match, so you can imagine the frustration and confusion. We ended up in that border for about 4 or 5 hours. Kind of got quite aggressive between our directors and manager and obviously the soldiers. after about 3.5 hours, the lad who've obviously been drinking water were needing the toilet. We saw a kind of a little temporary toilet across the road from us, so we just went to run over to it. And as we did, there was guys in balaclavas pointing machine guns, screaming, top of their voice at us as if we were, I don't know what they expected a team of footballers was going to do, but we all froze. The soldiers were screaming, obviously, in Russian, which I learned a bit of it, but I certainly didn't understand what they were saying. It was funny, the Ukrainian lads and the Russian lads scarpered quickly, got back in the bus, but we didn't really understand what was going on. It was just mental, really. I came back to the bus angry.
I mean, I suppose you can laugh about it now, but what a surreal situation to be in.
My whole experience in Ukraine, I'm delighted I did, and the experience now is great to talk about, but certainly I look back and think, what was I doing? Kind of, why was I there? I should have kind of just packed up and left that kind of stage, but you kind of just get on with it. It nearly becomes the norm, even though it's far from normal. Before I wanted to go out for dinner, I'd ring the translator or one of the officials at the club to see was it okay, because a lot of times we were told to avoid town because there was protests. For a couple of days, I was stuck in the hotel because, as I said, I was right in the middle of kind of Donetsk. I needed to be careful when I was leaving the hotel and stuff. Now that I look back, I was thinking, what was I doing? But it was a good experience, I suppose.
Because you're a dad, right, Darren?
My little girl's just 4, yeah.
Your family, what were they thinking at this time? They obviously, maybe they don't understand the intricacies because you're just reading about it or hearing about it in the news.
Well, that was probably the breaking point for me to decide to leave. New Year 2014 was when it really had started to kind of kick off, if you like. So they didn't come back over with me. They stayed. As you can imagine, I wasn't keen to bring them. So it was funny. I was reading it all on the news, but yet I was there. It made it sound worse than it was, but it wasn't. There was no fabrication to it. It certainly was. There was a war going on. It wasn't like bullets flying over my head. It was more you just have to be very wary of certain things. On certain days there'd be protests. You obviously avoided the city then. Travelling and stuff became a problem. But my family, because obviously all they're seeing is the news, yeah, they want me home and they didn't want me to go back. And that's obviously when they moved them from Donetsk and had to live in a hotel 4 hours away, that it became unlivable. There was no way I was staying then.
This is Football in Europe special interview.
Darren O'Dea, the former Celtic and Ireland defender, they're talking on his time in Ukraine with Metalurg Donetsk. Chris, I mean, an extraordinary story. We'll hear more from Darren next week, but his time in Donetsk was absolutely crazy.
Yeah, amazing. 3 years ago, Euro 2012 took place in Donetsk. It's one of the main stadiums.
Yeah, yeah.
Extraordinary. And it just goes to show, we talk about footballers on the pitch and complain about their performances. They make a mistake and they have all of that. They live normal lives outside of the game. Amazing stuff from Darren. So candid about it as well. Fascinating listen. And of course, that point you in a way of another really good piece. I think Andy Brassel did a video for The Guardian on Shakhtar.
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
you know,
really good.
The other side from Donetsk, their predicament playing in Lviv. Really, really good piece. And they made it through to the Champions League group stage again, which an amazing achievement. And Dynamo Kiev last season did really well in the Europa League under Sergei Rebrov, and you think all of this goes on around them and yet they still manage to go out and perform on the pitch. It's massive achievements, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Metalurg Donetsk no longer exist either. That's the extent to how they've been affected by the conflict. On the next show, we hear from Darren O'Dea on Celtic, Blackpool, Toronto and his impending adventure in the Indian Super League with Nicholas Anelka and Mumbai City.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
We'll get on to Mario Balotelli and AC Milan in a moment. Chris, at the weekend, Sunday night, what a huge game. They have been the top two teams in Italy for some time. Roma against Juventus and Juve have lost two in a row.
Probably the biggest game across Europe, I think, this weekend. Roma-Juventus, 2-1 win for the side from the capital. 17-point gap between the sides last season. It's going to be nothing like it this campaign. If anything, they didn't lose big players. In fact, they strengthened their side in the summer. Juve lost Pirlo, Vidal, Tevez. Massive names. I think they had 12 Scudettos between them. They've lost both games, as you said. That hasn't happened to a defending champion since the 40s, would you believe? Edin Dzeko, one of my signings of the summer, got a goal for Roma. Trademark header, really. Made something out of nothing. A ball into the box. Massive win for Roma.
You can't understand why no one else in England went in for Dzeko. I mean, there might have been some conflict from City wanting to sell to a Premier League rival, but you think people have missed a trick there, maybe?
I mean, you look at Manchester United, they had to bring on Fellaini up front against Swansea. Would Dzeko have come off the bench? Yes. Liverpool, they spent 30 million on Benteke.
Arsenal.
He's a good player. Arsenal played Walcott up front. hasn't quite worked. Giroud was on the bench. I honestly think Edin Dzeko would have strengthened the squads of all those three. I'm not saying he would have been the main striker, but he might have been.
Can I do my Edin Dzeko heading anecdote,
please? Oh, this is good. Yeah, yeah.
So he told me, I did an interview with him, and he told me he couldn't head the ball into his 20s. You know, he couldn't head the ball when he was at Wolfsburg. So I said, well, how did you get better? And he said Felix Magat was the manager, put a football on a rope and attached it to the gym ceiling. And he'd just have to head it, jump up and head it for hours. And he scored a fine-headed goal at the weekend. Dybala did score a consolation goal for Juve. And Patrice Evra sent off. And, of course, Juve in Manchester City's group in the Champions League.
To say, the best thing about that story as well is that after you did that interview with him, he then didn't score a header for about a year.
I actually think that might be the first headed goal he scored since then.
Maybe needs Felix Magath again, and you don't say that very often.
Okay, let's move on to Mario Balotelli's AC Milan, as they are now. Balotelli was on the bench, and he didn't come on in a 2-1 win for Milan against Empoli. Ironically, it's the two players who will be Milan's first-choice strikers this season who bailed them out of jail, Chris.
Two very good goals. Carlos Bacca, trademark finish, through on goal. Luis Adriano got a header. A pretty dreadful Milan. Sinisa Mihailovic said as much. He said they were terrible in the win over Empoli. But we had Adam Summerton on about, do Milan need him? And he said, no, absolutely not. He'd have to go through some hot streak if he's going to displace Bacca or Luis Adriano. I know it's a long season, but they're not in Europe, so they don't have that many games in terms of squad rotation. He's nowhere near Luis Adriano or Carlos Bacca's level for me.
Let's switch our attention to Stefan Jovetic. We're talking about one Manchester City loanee. Jovetic came up last week and he's made the headlines again this week for Inter Milan.
Scored both goals against Carpi. Otherwise, we would have been talking about Carpi, by the way. They were in the fifth tier about 6 years ago or so. They scored late to equalise. Would have ruined an accumulator I had, by the way. But
stop
anyway,
bringing up your accumulators.
Just
on the
successful, mate. Successful.
Did it come in?
So Jovetic popped up with a penalty and I was dancing around the living room.
I bet you were.
But on a serious note, he scored two goals. They weren't great finishes, but the penalty he tucked away. He was in the right place at the right time for the first one as well. But I think he'll be a terrific player for them. He certainly has been so far, and Inter have six from six.
Yeah, so do Torino, Chievo, Sassuolo and Palermo at the moment in Serie A. One other game I wanted to talk about, Chris, because Rafa Benitez left Napoli in the summer. Maurizio Sarri is the man who replaced him. They lost on the opening weekend and they played out a 2-2 draw with Samp. This was a bit of a collapse from Napoli.
Yeah, they were two up. Higuain got both their goals. They didn't win. They still have a very strong team on paper, and of course they missed out on that.
Well, I can't see they've lost any big players, particularly. No, it's the same group.
Yeah, it is the same group, and I just wonder, we talked about Edin Dzeko and about some of the big boys in the Premier League needing a striker, and Higuain, he's a proven goal scorer. He's only 27. I accept he probably cost quite a lot of money, but he was linked with Arsenal, remember last summer? That was the rumour all summer.
Yeah, that was another one. Yeah.
And it didn't happen, but he scored two goals. I think Gonzalo
and
Higuain.
What are you paying for Higuain, do you think? I mean, I don't think Napoli will sell now. How much would you be paying? What's he worth, do you think?
In the current market, who knows when Kevin De Bruyne is going 55 million. I would think that Napoli would probably hold out for 30 million, realistically.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But I think if you want to get a goal scorer, you're going to have to spend that money, whoever you get. It's just funny how it seems to go in cycles, and Higuain's name hasn't really been mentioned very much, but he's a proven goal scorer. He got two, they didn't win. And so far, it's not been the greatest start for Sarri and co.
I did mention that Chievo are joint top of Serie A. It's worth noting, they beat Lazio 4-0. We'll get into Lazio more on a future edition of the show.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Let's move on to matters in Spain. BT Sport reporter Andy May used to live and work in Madrid for Real Madrid. He joins us now, Andy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. I must just say that I'm not a Real Madrid fan, for those who are wondering, because you always get that, oh, you work for Real Madrid, you must be a Madridista. No, I like Real Madrid, but I'm not a fan. I have to just get that in there because, you know, everybody is so split, aren't they, on the Clásico too. You kind of get that question before you've even had a chance to make a point about anything else.
So you must have been so happy that they won 5-0 against Pepe Mel's Real Betis at the weekend. Gareth Bale playing in the 10 and scoring a couple of goals. He actually scored a goal, picking up the ball from the middle of the pitch and scoring from about 30 yards out. What do you make to this Bale in the 10 position argument?
he's a great player, and in La Liga he can do it. It can definitely work. He's definitely good enough. But for me as well, his best position is out wide. There's no doubt about that. I'd rather see Isco or even James through the middle, to be honest. James Rodriguez. Real Madrid want him to be the focal point a bit now, which will be interesting to see how that goes down with Cristiano Ronaldo across the whole season. 16 shots for him so far in La Liga, no goals. That can't go down well in the Ronaldo household. I still think it can be a success for Bale in that position.
I saw he did his first interview in Spanish last week. Are they on a bit of a PR charge because he has been criticised?
Yeah, I saw that Spanish interview. It was with Real Madrid TV, actually, my old employers. And he was also on the front page of Marca as well. So yeah, you're right. It was very much a week of PR. And from that point of view, very good that he could actually finish off the week by, you know, coming up with the goods on the pitch. The other goal was pretty special as well from Bale. I don't know if Perez would necessarily pick the team down to positions. Clearly, he has picked players in the past. He's signed players he wants to see. But I'm sure he would have put pressure on him to say, look, Bale needs to come up with the goods this season. He needs to be as effective as he was, if not better, than his first season. Because last season was, no doubt about it, a very disappointing season for Bale. And with Benitez, he's done well in his career as a manager. But he would consider himself probably quite fortunate to have got that job. There were other candidates that might well have been a better choice. Maybe a Jurgen Klopp, he had a bit of backing in Spain. He might feel that he kind of has to please Perez a bit more than another boss like a Mourinho. Mourinho would go in and he would do what he wants, and quite rightly so, because it would get the job done.
Keylor Navas saved a penalty in the game as well, and James Rodriguez scored a stunning overhead kick. He actually scored two great goals in the game. Let's move on to Barcelona, 1-0 winners over Malaga at the weekend. MSN was all back together, but it was Thomas Vermaelen, the unlikely only goal scorer. I mean, we won't dwell too long on the fact that Malaga have a player called Huancar either.
Well, I think he's been called other things on television broadcasts, hasn't he, which is quite sensible.
I think that's the smartest thing to do in that situation. Let's talk about Yarramendi, started for David Moyes' Real Sociedad. Another 0-0 draw for them, but I know you went over to interview David Moyes. Do you think he's enjoying that, and what are his objectives for the new season? Because it's a tough job. He just had to keep them up last season, and now there's expectation to move them up the table.
Yeah, but I don't think the expectation is massively higher in terms of official targets set by the club's president. Obviously, Moyes will clearly want to do as well as possible and get them back into Europe. They were in European competition only a few seasons ago. Staying up is not the objective. They would kind of take that as a given, really, especially with signing somebody like Yarramendi. That's a massive statement from La Real. Mid-table, maybe top half. I think that's possibly realistic. Get to the quarterfinals of the Copa del Rey, perhaps. But Moyes is really enjoying it there. He's so into it. I went to do a feature for BT towards the end of last season. Not just the football, the whole culture, really. He's learning Spanish. Considering he was quite badly burnt by his experience at Manchester United, he kind of seems like a reborn man. So I went to training on one day during the week, and he was there a good 90 minutes before the players were even due to start, out there on the pitch, setting up drills with Billy McKinley, one of his assistants, and just loving it, really. I think it's a great thing he's got going there. La Real are not expected to finish in the top five or top six. There's no kind of huge United or even Everton-esque pressure. So it's a great chance for him to reinvent himself and get back into the game. But long term, I'm sure he would say this as well, Premier League, it's got to be on his mind to return back to England. It's just a case of the job being right. I know West Ham was mentioned over the summer, but Moyes possibly didn't want to kind of leave La Real after quite a short period of time. I can see him doing another two seasons.
If we can talk about Roberto Soldado now, Spurs fans probably won't believe it, but he set up two and scored one. I think he's already got more goals than he did in his whole time at White Hart Lane. But are you surprised that he's back and he's scoring goals?
It's similar to Reyes, isn't it, in a way? He started well, actually, didn't he, to be fair, at Arsenal. I think he had a good goal-scoring record in his first 10, 15 games, but I just never think he settled, and that was a massive factor in why he didn't do very well at Arsenal. Went back to Spain and was suddenly a good player again and playing in Europe, winning trophies. I don't think that's quite the case for Soldado. He's quite an educated guy. He's probably not somebody who struggles to settle in a new environment. And there are Spanish speakers, of course, like Lamela in the Tottenham side, his manager, Pochettino, not a Spaniard, but a Spanish speaker. I don't think that was an issue. It just never worked, did it really? The style of play didn't suit him. Yeah, I'm sure he'll be fine now, like Llorente heading back to La Liga.
Well, let's talk about that, because Llorente started up front for Sevilla in their 3-0 home loss to Atletico. What a result in what was probably the biggest fixture of the weekend. They started with Torres and Griezmann. Jackson Martinez came on and he scored in the game. You mentioned the Atletico squad there, Andy, but the attacking options they have this season with Ferreira, Carrasco and Luciano Vietto didn't even come on. I mean, that's a great squad that Diego Simeone has. What do you think to the team he's assembled?
Yeah, it's a great side, and Luis coming in as well, back in defence alongside one of my favourite players in La Liga, Godin. He is such a rock. The only thing is, as I said, their squad is quite small. So when the games sort of start to pile up, because they normally do well in the cup competitions, that could affect them. Also, they don't have the talent of Madrid or Barca, do they, in their starting 11? It's not at that level, if we're honest.
Andy, really appreciate you coming on this week's Football in Europe.
Thank you.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
OK, time to finish the show with a roundup of the rest of the major European leagues and stories. We'll start, Chris, in the Eredivisie. We heard from Michael Jongsma on the programme last week, and some of the players he mentioned delivered this week in the Netherlands.
Yeah, and his colleague Peter McVitie apparently calls El Ghazi for Ajax the new Memphis.
Right.
Interesting. He scored again. 6-4 this season. There can't be a striker more on form, I don't think, in the European game. Ajax look really good. 12 points from 12. They fancy their title back, I think. A huge result for me there for PSV, who obviously lost Memphis. They lost Wijnaldum. They beat Feyenoord. They came from behind. And that, I think maybe that's liftoff in terms of their season. They've still got a lot of young players. They're an exciting team to watch. But I think had they lost, you might be thinking they look a little off Feyenoord and Ajax, but they didn't. They won, and for that's a big result. And from Feyenoord's point of view, having taken the lead, I think they'll be disappointed.
Maxim Lestien, the player who has been in effect brought in to replace Memphis Depay at PSV, scored in that game, as we mentioned last week, on loan from that Qatari club. Yeah. Who have no interest in playing him. Vitesse, we've called them Chelsea, second team or something? They've got loads
of second team.
Second team.
Youth academy.
Some of the Chelsea players on loan there at the Dutch club scored at the weekend.
Lewis Baker got a penalty. I think he missed one as well.
Lewis.
It was interesting listening to Mikhail last week and saying how hadn't seen much of Dom Solanke, and Izzy Brown needed to persuade him of his talents. But he said Lewis Baker.
He liked Baker, didn't he?
He liked Baker. You know, I saw quite a bit of him in the youth league last season, and he looked a class apart there. He scored. Dom Solanke did score, though. First professional goal. Another man in Chelsea's march to the European youth title last season. He scored bundles and bundles of goals. And
Yeah. You
just wonder, we've mentioned it before, but they're playing top-level football against some big opponents. That can only be good for Chelsea because, you know, in past years, they might have gone to the Championship.
Like Patrick Bamford and...
Yeah, like Bamford, like many others.
Chalabar and...
Nathan Aki, yeah. But they're there, they're playing first-team football, and they're part of a side that won 4-1, and I'm sure that will do them the world of good.
OK, Russia, Chris. I know you saw Andrei Villas-Boas lose his mind for Zenit against promoted Krylia Sovetov.
It was a bizarre performance. They lost back-to-back home defeats. They only lost once at home all last season, and midway through the first half, it wasn't even a big call. It was a throw-in that went the wrong way, and he shoved the fourth official in the chest.
Did he?
Yeah. Who knows what will happen? I think it's more to come in the coming days or weeks, but you can't do that. Sent to the stands immediately. His team looked totally devoid, to be honest.
He isn't popular with the Zenit fans anyway. They don't play a great brand of football. And I've seen some of his post and pre-match interviews.
Yeah.
He's so frustrated about the rule changes in Russia to foreign players in your team. He just seems really agitated there at the minute. This doesn't really surprise me.
I heard the interview afterwards. He was very quick to say, this is absolutely my responsibility. I'm the coach, which is a brave thing to say when you've lost at home again. But it doesn't look at the moment particularly good for him. He had a brilliant season last campaign. I know some of the fans weren't happy with the style of football, but they won the title. It's not going right at the moment, and he needs to try and find another way, I think, of them winning games, particularly against so many teams in Russia against Zenit. We'll just sit back, try and hit them on the counter, and Karelia did that brilliantly. Kornilenko, remember, he was at Blackpool. He scored two really, really good goals. And, of course, it gets worse for AVB because Cska won again. They're 6 points ahead of Zenit. They've won every match this season, and those two meet in Moscow in 2 weeks. If Zenit were to lose that game, I think you get to the stage where maybe people start questioning whether AVB is the right man to take Zenit forward.
One notable game from Switzerland at the weekend. It's one of the big fixtures in the Swiss football calendar. Basel against Zurich, and it finished 3-1 to Basel. Gashu plays up front for them, really good in the Champions League last year. He scored in that victory, and we expect Basel to just win the league again.
Yeah, change of coach never seems to...
It doesn't make a difference,
left,
does
Paolo
it?
Sosa left, but they're still the best team by miles.
Okay, we've come to the end of today's show, Chris. Another good one. Can we get some enthusiasm out of you?
I am. I'm going to Greece, if I make my flight. By the time this is out, I could just be sat depressingly having missed my flight. But we'll see. I'm hoping to sit in the taverna and watch Greece against Finland. Unfortunately, it's not on the island I'm going to. That would have been unbelievable. But
because
you're
going with your fiancé and the family, so that will go down superbly well if you go away to watch Greece in a European qualifier.
Yeah, Greece, Finland. I'll bring them along.
I don't think they'll want to go.
They will. No, they won't. They hate football.
Okay, so no show next week because of the international break, but we'll be back with your look at all the major European leagues on September the 14th.
You've been listening to Football in Europe. Join us every week on Audio Boom for the latest content, interviews and special features. For more, follow @FAE Show on Twitter or head to footballineurope.co.uk.